Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network. Here to discuss all things Star Wars television. And we are back after a short break to discuss Season 4, Episode 7, Darkness on Umbara. It was nice to see some actual Clone Wars in the Clone Wars, wasn't it? And joining me tonight, also having enjoyed their break, are Jen.
Hey, everybody.
Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. Having just started reading the new novel Riptide, I'm on kind of Umbaran overload here, overdosing, but we'll see how this episode turned out.
And Master Collect-em-all, Barrett.
Hey, everybody, it's your Swan Holocron Enhancer coming back to you after the break. Hey, Rockstar, stand at attention when I address you.
How do you know I'm not?
Just make sure if you're going to address Dan the Rockstar, you mess up his numbers a little.
Yes, and we're going to get to that. But all in all, I had a lot of fun this episode, but let's not just take my word for it. Let's go around as we did last week. Since this is such a stark difference to our last episode, let's see what everybody thought. And since she's back from New York Comic Con, let's let Jen start us off. Jen, what did you think of this episode?
I love this episode. This made me so happy. After like all the stuff that we've had the previous part of the season, I was like dancing in my chair the whole time this episode was going on. I love the whole thing. We got to see clones again. I was so happy to see the clones. And like Hardcase and Fives was there, and they were all just like, they were riffing off each other, and it was so much fun. I didn't like to see so many of them get exploded, and I'm very concerned for Fives given the history of Domino's Squad, but I liked it. I love this episode.
Nathan?
You know, I did like this episode. I think it's, at this point, I'd say it's on par with the first three episodes this season. It didn't really thrill me because it sort of felt like a one-trick pony. It was basically, here's half an episode of battle, and a bunch of clones dying who we don't know, and a bunch of sort of generic background comments from the clones. Maybe it would have been nice to have that a little pithier. But by the time we get to the end, and we've had a chance to see General Krell, who must have trained with Wolf recently, I was kind of getting to the point where I was hoping this would go a little more in-depth. We wind up getting a great exchange between Rex and Krell near the end that says something I've wanted to hear someone say straight up in the Clone Wars for a bit now. And because of that, because of the ending, this sort of one-trick pony does wind up becoming a pretty decent setup for what I hope is a great three episodes to come for this four-part arc.
Baron, what were your thoughts on this episode?
You know, Rockstar, I have to say I really like this episode. You know, I kind of consider this episode like the cracker that you get after you've been starving for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. You know, it's kind of the best cracker you've ever tasted. And this is how this episode was. You know, it finally gave us everything that we wanted. You know, fighting, clones, a little mystery to who this Krell character is. And actually, at San Diego Comic-Con, this episode here, Filoni showed the most clips of this episode here, and this was the episode that I felt that he was most proud of, showing the differences, how he could use the mist and the lighting and the shading and stuff like that. So he showed a lot of clips from this episode, and this is what got me really excited about this season. So I was all jazzed to see this and to see the clones coming back and to see how Krell, you know, we don't know kind of where Krell's standing yet. You know, he's not acting like any Jedi that we know of, at least not any Jedi that actually stays with the Order. You know, he's very hard on the clones. He doesn't even really see him as, you know, human. And just having that intrigue with the battles, I mean, I couldn't ask for anything more. And it just kind of has me question, if you can make episodes like this, you know, why make the other episodes that we got? You know, but that's a question that I intend to ask Filoni at next San Diego Comic-Con. But all in all, I really enjoyed this episode.
I'm right there with you guys. I really enjoyed this episode. I'm not sure if it's like Baron brought out, if it's because I've been starving over the beginning of this season for some good clone action. That just sounds inappropriate. But this was a lot of fun. I mean, this felt like good old Star Wars. This was battles and lightsabers and blasters flying everywhere and things flying by in the mist that I wasn't quite sure I saw all the way. And I kind of wanted to come back and get a clear shot of what the Umbaran starfighters looked like. You know, this was just, it was action, 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 which I'm okay with after the, whatever the deuce you want to call the last two episodes with the droid shenanigans and then the Naboo thing. I mean, we kind of had some good things happening there on Calamari, but we didn't get a lot of clones. We had a little bit, but they died off rather, a lot of them died off rather quickly, and it focused more on the Calamari, or excuse me, the Mon Cala. So I was really glad to see just some straight up clone army in action, the Grand Army of the Republic doing what they do. So this made me happy. I don't know, once again, if it was because of the lack of it that we've had or because it was actually just a good, fun episode. But a lot of good points, and we will get to those. And a lot of good points were brought up by our listeners in the voicemails, which we will also get to. So starting out, we are assaulting the world Umbara because it is a key location on the trade routes, and it has aligned itself with the Separatists. Now, this kind of surprised me. This isn't something that we've necessarily seen before in this show. We've seen the Republic go in to defend systems that are under attack by the Separatists who are either neutral or who were Republic. But this is a planet that has aligned itself with the Separatists, and the Republic is going in to take it back, or to take it in the first place, either one. That is a little bit of a different twist. Gives the Republic not entirely the justification that they may have had in other battles.
Well, more to the point on that whole issue, it's not just that this is a Separatist world. I mean, this is a world that was previously part of the Republic that we, granted, we didn't see the planet. I mean, this is a planet that's talked about a lot, shows up in source books a lot. This is the actual first time we've seen something set on Umbara. But remember, we had Senator Mee Dichi back in the, I guess it was the Senate murders arc there. I mean, we've seen a senator from this planet, and since then, they've decided to leave the Republic. So this isn't not just someone who left and became part of the Separatists before the Clone War started. They actually defected or seceded, whatever you want to call it, during the war itself. I think that makes it an even more poignant thing that they're attacking this planet.
Not only were they part of the Republic, but these are also a humanoid species. And we discussed this a little bit earlier in a previous show how, you know, most of the Separatists are mostly alien or, you know, the droids that they're fighting. This is a humanoid species that has not aligned themselves with the Republic, with the humanoid Republic, which is very interesting. And I hope that we start to find out exactly why they defected, because if Senator Dichi was any indication of how this race are, they're very smart. They might not be very evil, but they're very smart, so it's almost like they've made a decision not to align themselves with the Republic, and I hope that just kind of fleshes out as this arc continues.
I would also point out, since we are talking about ways that we've seen this, and I mentioned the fact this is the first time we've seen Umbara, they tell us in that opening that it's part of either the or a ghost nebula. And that's something that's been around for quite a while, at least as far as the background of this planet goes. But that's also recently been used. I mean, it's kind of odd. The Umbarans have been used recently in the Riptide novel, but we've also seen this whole ghost nebula concept, this broader location used recently in Hayden Blackman's Darth Vader and the Lost Command comic book series. It just ended, I guess, what, a couple of months ago now? 2 or 3 months? So it's making me wonder if there is a little bit more coordination between the cartoon series makers and those producing the licensed works. I'm guessing it's just a coincidence, but it's an interesting coincidence that at least opens the door to that possibility, which is nice.
You know, maybe that is a point. Maybe they are, maybe current writers seeing how things are getting destroyed are more following Clone Wars as a lead, letting them kind of the stage and then following their pieces rather than trying to make their own way and then having it get just tossed out the window. It'll be interesting to see if this is a trend or just a fluke. All right, now I know we all want to talk about this. This is the first time that we're getting to see Rex in his new armor other than in little snippets here and there and previews. We get to see Rex in full effect here. Right, Rex and Effects. Wasn't that Rex and Effects? That was an 80s rap band, wasn't it?
Rex and Effects, 1994. All I want to do is I'm a zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. Just shake your rump.
Scary that you and my wife were singing that at the same time.
She's got good taste, Rockstar.
So we've got Rex in his...
It's phase two, but isn't it sort of an altered... I mean, it's not exactly phase two, is it? Isn't that... But I'm not even sure if this is regular phase two armor. I thought that... Weren't they talking about going towards something of more of a hybrid design, kind of like what they did with... What's his name? Way back in the Kamino arc last season?
You know, Nathan, you bring that up because that was another thing that Filoni had said at the San Diego Comic-Con panel, was that Rex did not like the transition from phase one to phase two armor. He considered it a downgrade in the armor. So he made a point, Filoni made a point of saying that Rex is going to have an amalgam of these armors. He's going to have his own unique armor. And I was kind of looking to see if I could see any changes, you know, so it's kind of still looks like the regular ARC trooper armor, but am I wrong? It just looks really cool on Rex.
That must have been what I was thinking of when it sprung to mind, because it didn't sound right just saying regular phase two. I do have to ask, though, as a broader question, I mean, we get the new armor. Is this the first time? It's been a long time since I really paid attention to Rex's hair outside of his helmet. But wasn't he predominantly usually sort of a close-shaved blonde? Is this the first time we're seeing him utterly bald, or am I just completely mixing up my clones because, well, they all look alike?
Oh, come on now. That's clonist, Nathan.
I think he still has the blonde hair. I think it's just cropped really, really short. Because in a couple of scenes, you can almost see it, but it's so dark on the planet that you can't really tell. But I think he still has it.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. At some points, I thought, okay, he's blonde and he's bald and he's got a serious shine on his melon because he's getting a lot of reflection. Other times it would look like it was just really, really short cut, but still blonde. Which really, I mean, these guys are bleaching their hair out in the field. They got nothing better to do.
He's trying to look pretty.
It was cool to see some of the other hairstyles on the clones. I liked Dogma and his big tattoo across one of his eyes, kind of a Mike Tyson thing going there. And then the one that had the top knot, that was kind of cool. But back to Rex's armor, I really liked the tally marks on his right temple. That was cool.
He's got them on both sides, actually. I noticed that, too. He's got them on both sides of his helmet. And he's got a lot of check marks on there, so I'd love to know how long he's been doing that. But little details like that they've been putting into the show now, and I really love it.
And imagine the coordination it would take if he's not taking off the helmet to put the tally marks, if he's just reaching up blind and putting them, and they're winding up in those perfect rows.
Well, you can see where he's getting some of these marks. I mean, because when they land there as an invasion force, they are just totally going balls to the wall. As far as, attacking, you know, they are in this invasion force. And, you know, I always try to your point earlier, Rockstar, have you said that this is kind of the first time where, you know, usually they're defending things, they're defending planets, you know, they're giving resources and help. You know, they're actually, I don't think we've seen an invasion force of the Clone Wars since landing at Point Rain or the Tartakovsky episodes where they were going after Dirge, where I've tried to make it a point where, now they're acting like stormtroopers when they're an invasion force, you know, going in instead of peacekeepers. And I really like seeing that the transition going from peacekeepers to kind of the stormtrooper invasions, you know, and it was really cool just to see them just kicking all kinds of butt at the beginning when they first land with the AT-RTs jumping out the back of the dropships. And, you know, it was just really cool.
Yeah, that landing sequence, that initial battle, that was the Clone Wars. That is what I feel like we should have seen a lot more of in the last 3 1/4 seasons. I mean, we've seen it a few times. We've seen a few episodes that have been just action for the sake of action, which some people have complained that just doesn't make an entirely entertaining episode without a story. But in a show called The Clone Wars, I want to see a lot of Clone Wars, and this I felt gave that to me, so I felt fulfilled.
You know, and you're not alone, Rockstar, because that landing sequence was the first clip that they showed at the Comic-Con, and you should have heard the applause and the you know, the laughter and just the yells that all the audience was making when they were seeing those drop ships drop those clones, you know, in the fog and everything. So, you know, this was a home run, you know, way back when. Home run now, home run then. Did I just rhyme?
On the subject of the new armor and such, with Rex, I think we actually did get a brief glimpse of it back in Water War, but we don't see him actually using it in action. I think you just see it in a brief, you know, kind of a blink and you'll miss it type of thing. We finally get to see it in full force here. I actually thought the cooler looking armor was on our finally returning surviving member of Domino Squad. It was Fives. I really liked the look of his helmet. I don't know if it was because it was less cluttered looking than the way that Rex's looks with, you know, the eyes and then with the tally marks and everything. There was just a little bit of redness added to it. But I really like the look of Fives. I saw him coming back, and at first I was like, wow, who's this cool new character? Wait, that's Fives? I was excited to see him back and love the new look.
I was really glad to see Fives, but I'm with Jen. I fear for him. Based on what's happened to everyone else from his squad, every time he shows up, I'm like, oh, crap, this is it. It's the end for Fives.
Yeah, I think they were like almost messing with us to that effect just in this episode with what Krell does with the lightsaber in that one scene, because I thought they were going to kick him. I thought they were going to kill him in that one little bit.
And Jen, more to your point, didn't it seem I kind of got the feeling that they were trying to make a new crew, you know, because they kind of introduced us to a few more different clones. They've named them. They made them really cool design. And they're going through a battle of unsurmountable odds, kind of like how, you know, the Domino Squad did. And now Fives is an ARC trooper, isn't a leader, you know, because they, you know, it almost seemed like they were trying to make another crew for us to love and get to know. Did anybody else feel that way?
We know Fives has got to get other people with him. He can, like, make them honorary members of Domino Squad. That way they can die first and it doesn't have to be him.
Give him a red shirt.
Exactly. You're an honorary member of Domino Squad now. Oh, you're dead. Who's next? Who's next? Who wants to be part of Domino Squad? Come on.
Like you were saying, Barrett, I really love the new clones they've got in here. I think some of them are actually ones we've seen before, because Dabid was rattling off how some of them already have. There's two, like Kix and Jesse, I think, that are in there. And they already have action figures. So I guess they showed up somewhere else and I just missed their names. But I don't recall Hardcase before, and I think he maybe was in something before too. He doesn't have a figure, but I really liked him. He was really fun. I always usually get like excited about the characters who are just a little bit crazy in a fight. It was just really entertaining to watch him go nuts.
What's interesting, Hardcase, I gotta wonder if they were purposely doing this. Hardcase's first episode, I think the only other episode he was in, was back in The Deserter. And that was the only other one to really hit us over the head with this whole idea of, these are men, not just clones. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where, and they've done this before, where if they're going to use a theme throughout the series, or if the same writer comes back, they'll tend to use the same clone names again. I got to wonder if this was a purposeful thing, or if it was just a happy accident. Another one of those interesting coincidences, like the stuff with the Umbarans and all the other materials out there lately.
Oh, Nathan, I don't think it was a coincidence at all, because you mentioned The Deserter, and you have Hardcase, and then you have Jesse. Jesse is the one with the Imperial symbol on his helmet. You know, they didn't say his name, but he was there. Another thing that I caught was that, you know, there's this things going on the forums, things going on the internet. How's Rex going to, how is his story going to wrap up? You know, is he going to desert, you know, like The Deserter and kind of leave the Republic and kind of survive? He's going to go off with Ahsoka or whatever. Rex makes a line in there when Anakin is talking to Rex and one of the new clones comes up and Anakin says to, you know, his troops, you know, everybody take a rest. And Dogma says, you know, I don't need to rest, standing at attention. Anakin says to him, says to Rex, you know, he kind of reminds me of you. Well, actually, Rex says first, you know, he's a loyal trooper. And then Anakin says, well, he kind of reminds me of you. And then Rex kind of turns into the camera and says, yeah, back in the day. So it's kind of setting the seeds there that Rex may not find, you know, this, he may not find the warrior's death. You know, he may not think that this war is worth his life or worth his clone trooper's life. And it's kind of setting the seeds there for his defection. Just that one line, as well as the other connections that you made, Nathan.
You can kind of see him there looking at Krell and you know, maybe in the back of his mind. I mean, they all know Order 66 is part of what's drilled into them. They know these orders, you know, do exist. They could happen. You just imagine him sitting back there going, Anakin, yeah, you'd be okay. Ahsoka, you'd be okay. Krell, oh, you'd be totally 66, my friend. And just kind of ticking off, you know, the balance of who he's willing to die for versus who he's not. Because, like I said, he gets that great argument here. But you've seen the character grow with him. Because he starts out focusing on the idea of it's about the mission, it's about the cause. And he sort of starts to question himself back in the deserter, but not enough to really get the sense that we would think he realistically might be a deserter someday himself. But here, you're starting to see him, as we go along, get more individualized, and now he's taking up essentially the argument that Anakin's had with others about how these aren't just clones, these are men. It's a movement for him. It would have been nice to see that happen in more steps, but we do at least have some character growth for Rex. And from the standpoint of the clone troopers, most of them don't get much in the way of character growth. I mean, even Fives gets character growth, but only necessarily through the idea of ranks and different positions he's in, not so much his personality changing. We're finally getting to see Rex sort of come into his own here.
You brought up him taking off in his mind. Yep, Krell, you're going down in Order 66. I could almost see in two more episodes him pulling Order 66 practice with this squad. Or, you know, oh, I misheard you. I'm sorry. I thought you said Order 66 and we kind of shot this guy. Because Krell was not making any friends. Right up, well, I really thought things were going to get really out of hand, really violent when he whipped out his saber on Fives.
You can imagine him just kind of going, you know, they're walking along and you hear with Krell maybe right in front of Rex, you know, execute order, sit, boom, boom, boom. Wasn't
62.
Six, I was going to say 62. I meant the one that has a send out for pizzas, but all right.
You bring up Krell. What'd you guys think about his design? You know, I thought he looked exactly like Dexter Jexter, you know, because when they bring in these Jedis or these other characters that are from the same race, you know, more recently the Mon Cala, you know, we all know what Ackbar looked like, but when we saw a lot of the Mon Cala, they were kind of different colors and they had different markings on their skin and different braids or different beards or whatever those things are. You know, he looked right on Dexter Jexter, didn't he? Except for the scraggly beard or the mustache. I mean, he pretty much looked like Dexter Jexter, this kind of same color and everything. And, you know, immediately he was recognizable and likable until he opened his mouth.
Yes, he did. He was very recognizable as that species. He's not one of these that we kind of had to look at and say, who is he again? Who is he supposed to be? Like, we've had a few that weren't as easily recognizable as the species. Well, for crying out loud, Boss Nass isn't entirely recognizable as a Gungan until you see him surrounded by Gungans and talking like a dim. But he was easy to recognize as a member of that species that Nathan is now going to tell me what that is.
That is a Besalisk from the planet Ojam, though this one seems to be a little bit taller than the others. But on the issue of Krell, he opens up some interesting possibilities, because granted we have the sort of double-bladed lightsaber. It's more like a couple of lightsabers in this odd thing that's holding one pointing one way, one pointing the other, but it looks like they're not one lightsaber connected with just the blade going on either side. It's kind of a weird construction there. But imagine this guy. Four arms, theoretically, could be holding four lightsabers instead of holding two double-bladed ones. Him going up against a four-armed, four-lightsaber-wielding Grievous. That would be an awesome battle to see. And we can actually see Grievous using all four against an opponent that uses four. Not the way that Grievous uses his four most of the time, where a couple of them are spinning blades and the other ones just kind of hang around, but actually seeing a fully-fledged four-saber versus four-saber, two-opponent type of battle. If Krell survives, at least to the end of this arc, I hope they bring Grievous in here and make use of that opportunity. It's one of the few species that could actually pull something like that off visually.
So Krell versus micro-series Grievous?
Pretty much, yeah.
Or episode 3 Grievous, yeah. But, you know, I was kind of wondering, and Arnie had mentioned this on a previous podcast, is how is this going to work? How is he going to spin these lightsabers without cutting his toes off or his ankles, you know, on both sides? A double-bladed lightsaber on both sides, you know, to kind of twist it around like a baton in each hand. And I was wondering if he was actually going to use both hands on one side to use it to twist around, you know, both hands on the right side to twist one lightsaber and one double-bladed lightsaber, and then use his left arms to twist the other one. But no, he was actually using one arm on each side to twist it. So they did a really good job of not making it look awkward. Although it was a lot of close-ups and we didn't get a real full body shot of him actually twisting the lightsabers. It was kind of like a back into the side view. And when he fought those alien bugs, you know, he was just kind of like a stab down type of thing, or a traditional, you know, overhead cross, you know, slice. So I'm hoping to see a little bit more like a full body shot of how he actually handles these lightsabers without causing any damage to himself.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually kind of nervous about him, seeing as he has four arms. And as a biology nut, four-armed creatures really irritate me, especially when they're bipeds, because they don't work very well, especially since, like, your arm is anchored by your shoulder blade. And does he have four shoulder blades? Because that doesn't really work, because he doesn't have four shoulders. And it just confuses me. And I felt like they handled him really well, because usually in a lot of, like, cartoons and a lot of animated stuff I've seen, when you have a four-armed character, they usually just have, like, the second set either just standing there limply or exactly mimicking the top pair. And this guy, he was doing all sorts of different stuff, and he was handling his lightsabers in a really believable way. And I feel like they did a really good job with him. His whole design was really cool. For some reason, I was really fascinated by watching his teeth, too, just watching the way his mouth was animated. They did a really, really good job with him.
We've kind of hinted around it. Krell is kind of the Jedi equivalent to what we had our issues with about Wolf two episodes ago. Wolf was just this completely disagreeable, and I don't, for fear of getting Nathan on a tangent about how horrible Krell was, really, we said that we could see how the clones were going Imperial from how Wolf was, but like we've kind of hit around already, you can kind of see how Order 66 may not have been all that difficult to pull off if there were more Jedi that acted like Krell, and Anakin and Obi-Wan are actually the rarities.
You know, Krell takes it to the next level, though. Wolf is understandable. You know, he's a clone. He has to be kind of hard, you know, and he wasn't really that much of a jerk. He just kind of got upset with, you know, the droids. And nobody really likes droids anyway. I mean, that they're fighting droids. You know, even in episode one, Luke kind of dismisses the droids. You know, he's like, they're just droids or whatever. So, you know, as far as Wolf, I can kind of excuse him. But for Krell, Krell's a Jedi. He has no respect for these clones. None at all. He doesn't even call them by their names. He calls them by their numbers. You know, as soon as Anakin leaves, you know, he just starts commanding them almost in a disrespectful way. I mean, pulling the lightsaber out on one of your own troops, I mean, that could be considered treasonous, you know, if you're not in the Gestapo or something like that, you know. And the way he handles his troops is very hard. It's almost dark side-ish, if I may go there. So I think he takes it to a whole different level.
I do think he definitely has that vibe that Wolf had, and it certainly is not necessarily befitting a Jedi to act like that. But as much as he was a jerk that grated on me, here at least it feels like it's serving a storytelling point. With Wolf, it barely did, other than just to say this is why they're not going to give a crap what the droids are doing. Here, I mean, if you're going to have a storyline that emphasizes, as it seems at the end of this episode we might be going into, if you're going to have the concept here of these are clones and they're essentially human beings, yes, they're clones, but that doesn't change the fact that biologically they're human, blah, 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 all those metaphysical different debates that you can have about the idea of cloned human beings, you can't really do that as easily when you've got Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Anakin around. Because by this point, even Obi-Wan has gotten to the point where he's not necessarily looking at them all as just numbers. You know, yeah, they're clones, but he's seeing them more as individuals. And the EU went into very heavily with the idea that initially it's they're just numbers, then they slowly get seen as individuals. You see that a little bit with the series, you know, as we get more and more individualized clone armor and stuff like that. But if you're going to have an arc like that, you need to have some type of character who can come to that realization of, wow, these maybe do deserve a little more of my respect. And to get them to have that character growth to get there, you have to start them out at a point where they're the absolute opposite as much as possible, someone who really doesn't give a crap. I mean, it's to the point where the episode guide, what little there is on StarWars.com, refers to Krell as being the leader who has the highest casualty rate amongst clones of any of the Jedi generals out there. And he certainly doesn't seem to care. I mean, I gotta wonder if he is purposely... I mean, Barrett said the thing about how these are just numbers. He calls them just by their numbers, not their names. He doesn't even call them by their numbers. I don't know if it's a continuity error or if it was on purpose, but Rex is CC7567, not CT7567. Fives is CT275555, not ARC5555. unless they're making it so that Fives got his number changed as he becomes an ARC trooper, and maybe somehow Rex either started out as CT as just a trooper, not a captain, or he's trying to insult him by calling him CT. It's like he's getting the numbers right, but he's not getting the letters that go with those designations correct. I don't know if it's meant to be on purpose or not, but I mean, you start with a character that's that negative towards the clones, that much dismissive of their humanity, then you at least have a character you can use to do an arc that can provide some humanity or some revelation that, hey, these really are human beings. If we had done this with almost any other Jedi who didn't start out as a wolf-esque jerk, I don't think it would have played well, because it would have been preaching to the choir, wouldn't it?
Well, they also kind of contradict their own, like, not continuity per se, but in the very first episode, if you discount the movies, in the very first episode, Ambush, you have Yoda say flat out, in the Force, you are distinctive, you are individuals. And so you would imagine, at least I think, that any Jedi would look at these and see an individual and not see a clone or a number or a unit. And that's what makes him even more interesting, is that his behavior is almost contradicting what his senses are telling him. And I think that makes him very interesting, not because necessarily he may have, I didn't even think of him having an arc where he comes to care about the clones as individuals. He doesn't seem like that kind of person to me anyway. I almost wonder if he's going to be not necessarily siding with the Republic, because he's the most un-Jedi-like Jedi we've had yet in this series by far.
These Umbarans, okay? Granted, it makes sense to have, if it's a dark area, you'd have some bioluminescence for things like those Vixus creatures and that sort of thing. But the Umbarans are fighting against the clones with, first off, helmets that are lit from the inside, which A, would make it hard to see, I would think, and B, makes their heads immediate targets for any of the clones. You know, oh, shoot for the lit up head guys. And they're running around with weapons that not only fire, you know, light style energy, or what looks like light style energy, but they also have lights on the guns themselves. It's sort of like these Umbarans are setting themselves up so that they can be recognizable to each other, but at the same time, easily picked off by the enemy. And while on that note, on their own planet, they've got to wear these helmets to keep the air from messing with them. I don't think we've ever heard that about Umbarans before. I may be wrong, but I don't think that was part of their background prior to this story. It just seems like the whole conception of the way the Umbarans look and act in this episode doesn't quite fit logically with where it should.
That was a question I had. If the clones can breathe the air on Umbara, why can't the people that live there breathe it? That's just strange. Very strange.
It was strange. Maybe the mist has something to do with it, you know, that they found that breathing in that mist, maybe if you're there for a little while, it's kind of like, you know, I took it like smoking, you know, you can be in a casino for a little while and breathe in all the smoke, but you don't want to, you know, live there, you know, because it'll cause harm. And maybe they found that, you know, that smoke or that dust or whatever it is in the atmosphere, you know, over a lifetime of breathing that in would cause damage, as opposed to just being an invasion force and occupying it for a small amount of time. You know, maybe you can breathe it. So maybe over a lifetime it's damaged. So, but you know, maybe they'll go into that, maybe they won't. But I think we can agree that they're very interesting. You know, they're very interesting looking as far as their design, because from what I can tell, Senator Michi, he was more of a vampiric kind of looking character. These are more like a Mr. Clean type of character, you know, where they look a little bit more meaty. Granted, they are soldiers, and Michi was a senator. But I really like the way they looked, you know. I like the lit-up helmet and their lit-up guns. And, you know, I found it very interesting. They were so lit up, and they're able to ambush the clones so well. But they're very interesting. You know, they're a very interesting conceptual character.
Well, you know, the first time we saw one of these, if I remember right, was Sly Moore. You know, the aide that we see within the actual live-action films. And, you know, this is a species they've played around with. It's weird that we've never seen this homeworld before, because they played around so much, I mean, outside of guidebooks. They played around with these a lot. Phanius, the dark Jedi, or the Jedi who goes and becomes a dark Jedi, who starts that 2,000 years ago or so line of dark Jedi, line of Sith, I guess in this case, that eventually leads to Palpatine and Vader and so forth, who becomes Darth Ruin and starts the Sith Order we tend to associate with the films and now this cartoon series, he was an Umbaran. So they've played around with this a lot, but it seems like all of a sudden we have a very different take on them. I'm not sure if it's because they happen to be on their home planet, so let's give them the helmets, or what the deal is. It just seems off somehow.
You know what? I hadn't even connected Slymore, and now that you bring that up, I do find that interesting, because one of the big things I remember from, I can't remember if it was the visual guide or the visual dictionary, one of those, maybe it was even the action figure for Slymore, was that the reason her cloak and everything about her seemed so drab and gray was because M'Baren saw in different light spectrums than other humanoids. So to have them have to have all these light up things, it seems like it would conflict with somebody who sees on an ultraviolet spectrum. Very interesting. We'll see how that all pans out, I suppose.
Well, they do. They got an easy out, though, because they do talk about in, I think it's one of the alien guides, one of the essential guides, they do talk about there being essentially a caste system within this society. So they could very easily just say that some castes have an affinity more for viewing things with ultraviolet, and others have, you know, just their eyes have developed differently genetically, and they might need more of the light. There's a really easy out for it. I'm just curious why they went with that design choice rather than just how they're going to explain it away. Explain it away will be easy.
As we're talking about things that we may or may not have noticed, did anybody notice that the escort ships for the cruisers were not ARC 170s?
Z95 Headhunters, baby!
Yes, we are getting some Headhunters, which makes some of us EU nerds very happy.
Just to clarify for some of the listeners, the Headhunters are basically an X-Wing fighter. Instead of having two sets of wings, they only have one set of wings.
That is correct.
I'm glad Barrett said that because I don't know what they are.
I did notice that, and I looked. I had to, you know, rewind it on my DVR and be like, "Are those X-wings? No, they only have one set of wings. One set of wings."
We did see some interesting design of the clone pilot helmets, which I like those as opposed to the open face. I'm going to harp on this again. The one thing that bugged me the most about the clone design in Episode 3 was the open face helmets on the clone pilots. I like, even though these are kind of dog face like the ARF troopers, I like this as opposed to the open face a lot better.
If I can add to the comment there just real quick about the Z95 Headhunters, this is probably the furthest back in Expanded Universe stuff that this series not only will go, but perhaps even can go, because there wasn't a lot of early EU-type stuff. Marvel Comics very early on, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, that sort of thing. But the Z95 Headhunters were introduced all the way back in April of 1979. That's before I was born by half a year, in Han Solo at Star's End, the first of Brian Daley's Han Solo Adventures novels. That wasn't even considered a true part of the EU until later, when they decided to work some of these earlier Del Rey novels into the overall continuity with everything else in the early 90s, once they finally made that important decision to bring early stuff back into it. I'm really kind of... I'm shocked, yet I'm not shocked. Not shocked because Z95 Headhunters have become a bigger part of the EU over time, but to see something that has lasted almost as long as the Star Wars saga itself showing up here in a brand new production and having it be something that started out as EU, though it grew with a life of its own, is really kind of it bolsters the hopes of those of us out there who tend to follow the EU quite a bit, especially those who've been around with it for a very long time. It's an interesting thing, though, to see them delving back into something that has lasted the test of time, because Brian Daley is one of those guys who left an indelible mark on Star Wars, and any time we can see the late Brian Daley having his work referenced in any form, it's a good thing. I mean, this is the guy who put together the radio dramas of the classic trilogy that helped sort of bolster that whole push for audio dramas out there and Star Wars audio productions through NPR. He is a trendsetter of early Star Wars, and here it's borne out again.
See, I loved seeing these in this episode. You can crap on as much EU as you want, but if you reference one thing from classic, first off the page EU, that's just awesome to me. And that rights a lot of, I don't want to say rights a lot of wrongs, but it'll give you a little bit of a pass on some things in my book. I mean, I was first introduced to Z95 Headhunters thanks to, and I'm sure a lot of people were, thanks to like the X-Wing games and that. I mean, you spent a lot of time in a freaking Headhunter. So I felt like I kind of knew that ship, and you've seen it show up in other novels since then. So to see this referenced in the Clone Wars, this was one of those times when I feel like, rather than it being, wow, they could have so they could have done this and it would have been awesome. They did this and it was awesome. This is a great throwback.
And you can hear all about the discussion of Han Solo at Stars Inn, the original source of this, on the Star Wars Action News Book Club podcast. But it's interesting to see us getting into what we sort of saw with Episode 2 and Episode 3, and what we've seen, I guess, more in sort of the spin-off materials, even spin-off materials from this cartoon series and other EU, but particularly this one. We finally get to see another instance here of Palpatine essentially, for whatever reason, pulling Anakin off a mission. And in doing so, changing the situation for a particular battle. And you see him exercising that influence over Anakin as his way of sort of one-upping the Jedi Council in terms of what he can ask Anakin to do. You see that a lot. Matthew Stover does a great job building on that in the novelization of Revenge of the Sith. We haven't really seen it all that much in the cartoon series, it seems like. Now it's literally, oh, the whole battle is going to change. The entire tactics of this battle is going to change because Palpatine just decided, hey, he needs Anakin right now. And I gotta wonder what Anakin's mission is going to be, where we're gonna see it within these next three episodes, or if maybe it's one that we'll see later on as a parallel story to this. But it's cool to see them delve back into that meddling of Palpatine, even though he himself doesn't appear in the episode.
I did like that too. That's a theme that we've kind of seen get pushed aside here. Now to see it play out in the Clone Wars, it kind of reminds us, oh yeah, he's pulling the strings. When that first happened, that kind of made me think, crap, is this going to turn out to basically be a suicide run for everybody left behind?
Well, the way Krell was sending him into battle wouldn't have to be a suicide. It looks like he was just trying to get him picked off as much as possible. I mean, you don't have to be Stonewall Jackson to realize you don't want to fight in a basement. And you don't have to be Stonewall Jackson to realize you don't want to send your troops on the main road to go attack a fortified position. And I just had to question some of the things that Krell was doing for these clones, but a suicide mission not. They were going to die in a blaze of glory, if anything.
Does anybody here have any actual military experience? Because I was wondering whether or not it even made sense that the plan is already in place. There's multiple units doing different parts of this overall plan, and here comes in General Krell, and because he's not Anakin, he just does a whole different plan for his part of the overall plan. It would seem to me that wouldn't it make more sense, at least in a modern military term, in real life, that the mission stays the same no matter which commanding officer is switched in or out? Or am I missing that? I personally don't have military background, so I can't say for sure, but it felt off.
No, you're right, Nathan. You don't have to have a military background to know that you don't change the plan in the mid-execution of the plan, especially, as you said, you know, you have three or four different parts of the plan actually doing what you've discussed. So for him to change that up, no, that was not something, it was just common sense, you know, and he just wasn't using common sense. So that kind of goes along with the mystery of why is this Jedi acting like this? You know, has he already changed sides? You know, what is he doing? So I hope that is addressed in the future episodes and not just kind of abruptly, you know, wrapped up in a nice, neat little package. I hope they go ahead and let us know what is his thinking? You know, why is he doing this?
6 months before the Phantom Menace, they told him he was the chosen one. He's had a sore spot ever since.
Did anybody get the homage to the Minority Report with those little spider-like creatures that they kind of just threw on the ground to go shock the troopers? Did anybody remind you of the Minority Report? I really like these little creatures, you know, and are these creatures very expensive? Because they only sent one out. You know, you would think that they're pretty powerful and you can't really step on them because they would shock you. You know, you had to shoot them or Anakin, you know, hits it with the lightsaber. You would think that they would send out more than one. But that was pretty cool. And I, you know, as soon as I saw that, the toy collector in me was like, I want one of those to come along with the Umbaran, you know, just package that in with one of those little creatures in there and I'll be a happy Jedi.
That may be an unnamed species. So maybe they can name it something after Minority Report or something. Since, I mean, they tend to do that, the little Tuckerisms from time to time anyway. Because there was the ones that were flying and then there's the ones that were on the ground, jumping up and grabbing them and shocking them, the ones that they were, you know, told to stop playing with the beasties and everything. Mm-hmm. So we've got some nice stuff to give us a fleshed out Umbara. It'd be nice if we had real episode guides to tell us stuff like that, Lucas Online.
That we had that Sarlacc thing too.
Yes, I was going
to say
that.
I think that's actually the Vixus, come to think of
it. We had the Umbarans, own version of a Sarlacc pit. And not only did we have the Sarlacc pit, but they blew it up from the inside just like Boba Fett did. And I was like, oh, great. That's a great callback. And I thought Fives was a goner because he was the first one to get picked up by that. You know, what did you call it? The Vlixus? The
Vixus.
Barn Sarlacc pit?
V-I-X-U-S.
Vixix. And but they let him go. He dropped him, you know, and they took an unnamed clone and ate him. So I thought Fives was a goner. So I think Fives, Jen, I think you're absolutely correct. I think Fives is living on borrowed time because he's gotten out of too many close calls to where we know that some of the clones that we like are gonna get it. And I think Fives' days are numbered to these episodes.
Well, they keep throwing him in these situations where I keep thinking he's going to die. So they're just messing with us at this point. It's kind of funny.
All right. Now, since we've already pretty much covered everything that would be Continuity Corner, we have a whole slew of voicemails. Now, some of these are covering our previous episode because we were unable to access our voicemail because our secretary was in New York, Ernie. So we have a few discussing Nomad Droids, which you'll remember our thoughts on. And if you do not, feel free to go and download last week's episode to see what we thought of the Wizard of Droids.
Did you notice in this episode we did have a clone named Oz? I thought that was pretty cool. Nice callback to last week.
That was a nice callback. I wonder if that was on purpose. I can only hope. So let's go ahead and listen to our voicemails from our previous episode.
Hi, this is Jacob, Commander Jacob on the forums, just here to talk about the new episode of Star Wars Clone Wars. Well, in my few notes, I didn't really like the episode too much, and my notes were mainly about some weird things in the episode to start off. In the episode, when R2 and C-3PO took off, didn't Grievous battle Aligalia, I'm not sure if I said it right, on that Republic cruiser, but when they were flying away, didn't it blow up? And I kind of found it a little weird that on that first planet, they, you know, how R2-D2 kind of fell on the little king guy and he just went squish. It was, you know, kind of odd. The second one was definitely kind of a reference to the Wizard of Oz. But when the pirates found them, I was actually kind of hoping for Hondo. I kind of miss him, I must admit. Because, I mean, like, it might have taken the story for a good turn. That droid on the pirate ship, I'm just wondering, but was that the fire droid from the droid, I mean, not the droid, from the clone micro series that you guys just discussed, because he kind of looked a little similar to me. And, well, it was kind of weird that it was all in one episode, because I wish that they might have taken, you know, the episode, maybe made it a few episodes, because just squishing it all in there didn't really work for me. It was kind of weird. And if lines in the episode, they were talking about like a dinner party at the first one and the warship for General Grievous for melting down droids. I was wondering if those were callbacks to the party in Evil Plans, you know, from season 3, the one where Cad Bane takes the droids when they're trying to find those berries for the cake, and if the war machine was for the Malevolence. I think you all remember that. I'm guessing that none of those are true, but just, you know, wishful thinking. Well, thanks, and I'll call you guys back next week. Bye.
Hi, guys. This is Joe, Bane of the Sith on the forums. I just wanted to call in, let you guys know that this show absolutely rocks. I stumbled across it about 3 weeks ago, excuse me, while doing an iTunes search for some Star Wars related stuff. And since then, you have been all I've listened to. I've listened to every episode that you guys have done in the past 3 weeks. And that also motivated me to go back and watch everything again as I went through it. Also, I watched for the first time the Tartakovsky Clone Wars series just so I could listen to your coverage of it. So thanks for turning me on to that. But this week's episode, Nomad Droids, which is the first one I've actually been caught up with you all on to where I could comment on it, I loved it. And it seemed silly at parts, but man, it was fun all the way through. First off, Grievous's camo on there was just absolutely awesome. And maybe it's because I just finished the Tartakovsky series to where I have this Grievous in my head that's just a machine that just crushes Jedi, that, you know, left Shaak Ti hanging and embarrassed at the end of the series, and it was just this thing to be feared, so that when 3PO and R2 round that corner and you see Grievous just barreling down the hallway, I still had that Grievous in mind rather than the Grievous who gets beat up by Gungans that we got a couple of weeks ago. So I was a little scared of him seeing him down there. So then we're moving on, and the next thing that jumps out to me is everybody else is running to the pods. Well, R2 just jumps in this Y-Wing, like, you know, he's in charge of the fleet, it's no biggie. He doesn't need an officer or even an organic, living, real person to tell him it's cool to get in this, you know, Y-Wing and do his thing. He just kind of commandeers the vehicle and takes 3PO with him, and they're out there doing their thing. And the thing that kind of clicked in my head, and it's the first time I'd ever really thought about this, is that R2 is out there, and he is blowing up vulture droids, and he is just dodging and weaving in and out of all these explosions. And I'm thinking, whoever manufactures the droid army for the Separatists needs to just go and find the people that build these R2 units and be like, look, forget the battle droids and the super battle droids and the destroyers and the commando droids and all that garbage and the Magna Guards, all of them. Forget all of them. We want an army of R2 units, because these things can defeat any other droid in droid-to-droid combat. They are, hands down, the best pilots in the galaxy, obviously. I don't know how much of everything that we've seen done in the original trilogy and the prequels is that Anakin was a good pilot or that Luke was a good pilot. Maybe R2's been pulling the weight all this time. And I'm thinking, you know what, the Separatists would be better off with an army of R-series robots, or droids, excuse me. Then we get to where these guys finally touch down on a planet, and I love that 3PO starts, you know, talking smack. He's like the guy that tells you how awesome his friend is, you know, if there's a scrap getting ready to go down. And he's like, oh yeah, well, my buddy knows karate, and he's been in this many fights, and he's a gold gloves boxer and all of this stuff. He's like, you know, R2's fluent in over 7 million forms of droid kung fu or whatever he's talking about. And R2, meantime, while 3PO is doing his commentary, just goes all Swiss Army droid and starts kicking out his parts and everything. So I love that. It's like 3PO's talking the garbage, and R2's totally backing him up, like throwing some shadow boxing air jabs there. So that did it for me. After they accidentally kill the leader and 3PO declares, you know, that they're a democracy, I really like that added feature of the little people automatically start infighting. It's like, yay, you're a real democracy now, because this is how democracy works. You can argue and get nothing accomplished, but that's a political commentary, and I won't get into that right now. Second planet they went to, on the whole Wizard of Oz planet, I really loved it when they got in there, and it was the little episode one-esque Watto's worker droid guys with the, you know, the hit-the-nose button dudes. That one guy, the leader of them, the little red droid that said, if you want to order someone around, get your own organics. That was great. I loved the little droids finally, you know, taking it to the man and taking care and running their own little civilization there. Now, as they were leaving there, before they ended up getting off that planet, when, you know, 3PO's power cell is down to 1.4% and R2 is starting to beep slow, the boo, which apparently means my battery's low. 3PO tells R2 to take a break, and they both sit under a tree, and I'm wondering what good resting under a tree does when your battery's running low. I didn't know that that was a way to recharge a battery or any type of device. Next time my iPad's dying, rather than plugging it in, maybe I should just find a shady area to lay it down in, and it'll get better, because that was obviously 3PO's logical situation. But, you know, he's, you know, programmed for protocol, not necessarily knowing how batteries work. So, whatever. And when they were picked up, okay, I just, as I said, I just found your show, and I've been listening to tons of, or watching tons of back episodes to go along with the show. So I just today watched the fourth disc of season two, which means that I saw the episode Bounty Hunters, and I saw the episode Lethal Trackdown, both of which had cameos by my man, one of my favorite new Clone Wars characters over these past few years, Hondo. So as soon as we see these Weequay pirates, I'm like, oh man, we're going to get Hondo. This is great. All this fun stuff that's happened, and now we get to throw in, you know, Hondo, who's always got something smart aleck to say and who's so smooth and cool. And then we end up not getting Hondo, which is, I guess, for the best, since that ship ends up being target practice for the Separatists. So it's better that he wasn't there, because that would have been a really, really horrible way to lose a character like Hondo. But then I started thinking, as soon as I saw those pirates, I was like, oh, we're going to get Hondo, because they were Weequay pirates. Now, my next question is, if Hondo wasn't affiliated with that group, but they were the only other pirates we've seen in the show, and they happen to be Weequay, this is a big galaxy that they're in, with, you know, hundreds of thousands of planetary systems that we hear about. Why are Weequay the only pirates in the galaxy? Do they have some type of piracy lockdown going on, to where if you're going to be a pirate, you have to be a Weequay? Otherwise, you know, need not apply. I don't understand how that is. I guess, you know, the galaxy may be big, but there's a limited number of character models, so pirate equals Weequay in the Clone Wars. I was thinking, you know, poor Commander Wolf, when they finally get rescued at the end and Plo leads the group on and saves the day, which, by the way, Plo is the go-to Jedi to clean up in a minute, I've noticed over these past few days of watching older eps. Because when Anakin and Mace are trapped inside the Jedi cruiser that's down, and R2 come home, when they have to go save them, Plo's the guy that comes and does clean up there. He's the guy that goes during Lethal Trackdown to save the hostages there. So whenever they're in a pinch in this series for a Jedi to do something in the last 5 to 10 minutes of a show, Plo's the man. But anyway, that's not what I was talking about. What I was saying was poor Commander Wolf. This guy is like, how is this possible that I'm running into this golden guy again? This protocol droid who does nothing but talk about all these crazy things that I don't believe. And I was feeling bad for him for a split second, and then I remembered what a complete, children might listen to this, what a complete bad guy this Commander Wolf was to 3PO last week. So you know what? Load up on the boring stories, because Wolf was not a nice guy, you 3PO. So he deserves to ask to listen to any.
Hi, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Robert Darth Ikari calling in with my thoughts on the most recent episode of Clone Wars, the Nomad Droids episode. Let me just sort of transport you back in time a little bit here. 1977. I'm a first grader, trying to convince my mom that going to see this possibly scary, horrifying new movie that's in theaters is a good idea to go to see, because pretty much everyone at my school has been talking about this thing nonstop. And so I kind of go and I come up with the best excuse I could possibly come up with in my brain. I say, Mom, it's like the Wizard of Oz set in space. Fast forward about 30-some years, and we get the Wizard of Oz set in space. So, yes, I realize there's going to be a lot of griping on this episode. It's going to be a painful RFRN to listen to, but that's pretty much, it's sort of funny how things have kind of come full circle. Another thing I thought was just kind of interesting is being the anime geek that I am, having watched so many hundreds of episodes of hundreds of shows, another thing that maybe they were referencing when they were coming up with this is a old show from the late 80s called The Dirty Pair, which basically revolved around a pair of characters that were sent on these mercy missions or relief missions to different planets to solve, you know, disputes, contract problems, uprisings, whatever. And in the process of solving the problem, they always made the situation worse, usually ending with the, as they're leaving, the planet's in flames and they're saying that it's not my fault. Kind of like what happened here. I mean, I really was laughing my head off at the whole first planet that R2 and 3PO go to where they pretty much kill and torch most of the civilization in the name of setting up a democracy. I thought that was pretty damn funny. So, but otherwise, we'll see what happens when we come back to a real Clone War in the, well, not next week, but the following week. It's good to have a little hiatus and then to come back hopefully super strong for that, because it's nice to see it's going to be a four-part arc. I think that's the last time we had one of those was with the Brain Invaders Weapons Factory arc. So we'll see how that goes. But keep up the good work, guys, and I'll call you in 2 weeks, I guess. Have a good one. Bye.
Hey, this is Glenn Dooku on the forums, calling in about Nomad Droids, although I wanted to say that I'm a little bit disappointed you didn't catch my obvious Harry Potter reference in last week's voicemail. This week, I think really the biggest problem with this episode, especially with being that it's paired with last week's episode, is that this wasn't really the right time to show these episodes. I think that's why, just sort of more of a light hair, a lighter fare. I mean, obviously, it did have sort of a battle, but it's from C-3PO and R2's perspective, and they're not really involved in the battle, but the Separatists are against the Republic, and it's not quite sure what the sort of a sneak attack on some Republic ship. Not really sure if there's what the real stakes were other than the lives of the people on the ship, but. If he had a bunch of really serious, hard, tough war episodes, this would be a nice change of pace. But that's not where we are in the season. So, the big four episodes that are going to be coming up next, I think it would be better if these two episodes were after those. I think that might be a lot better. But I think the timing was just really wrong for showing this episode. And the other problem I have with this episode is that this is... I feel like it's the third time. I can only think of the East Koth arc from before, where Grievous has captured a Jedi and sort of had them hostage, and the Republic has come and, gotten them back, and, of course, one, they haven't reflected, oh, we lost 200 clones or whatever rescuing this one Jedi thing. They totally glossed over that again. But the fact is that, one, Grievous should be killing these Jedi. Why is he taking them prisoner? I mean, the whole point of the war, as we sort of know, is to eliminate the Jedi, sort of spread them out and kill them. And here's Grievous that has a couple, and he's not killing them. He's killed at least the four or five. I mean, he's killed Nedar Bab. And then these two that I can think of, Eeth Koth and Aayta Gallia, are two who, supposedly don't make it to Episode 3 anyway. So it would be perfect for them to get killed. And here they are being rescued again. So, a bit disappointing in that regard. It would have, even if you know, nice that her ship had her laundry in there, whatever, but she took it out and killed in the escape. Would have been a nice touch, but of course, if this is supposed to be a lighthearted change of pace, then of course you're not going to kill a Jedi in the middle of it, so I guess in that regard it makes sense, but since it's not a lighthearted change of pace in terms of where they're showing it, they could have killed her. You know, they could have filmed the episode both ways, and it still would have worked. But I'm sure you guys will tell me how terrible this episode was based on what you thought of last week's episodes, but I actually thought the episode actually was, you know, fairly decent. Nice Wizard of Oz safe, nice, you know, whatever, but I just thought it was just, you know, this wasn't the right time to be airing it. And I'll listen to what you guys say. Bye.
All right, we want to thank everybody who called in about the previous episode, Nomad Droids. We're sorry again that we didn't get to play those. We also have some calls this week.
How's it going, RFRN? This is Ben Nevis from the forums calling in with quite a few thoughts on this past Clone Wars episode, Darkness on Umbara. And let me start off by saying, like, from my point of view, it was worse, and this might be stretching it a little bit. It was worth going through those droid shenanigans to get to here, I thought it was great. It was great to finally get back to the clones. I mean, I've loved them ever since Rookies way back in season one. You know, it's great to finally get back to them and to the actual Clone Wars that this whole show is supposed to be about. But let's see, starting off, it was great to see Fives again. I mean, you know, he's one of the favorites, I guess I could say, back from Rookies. He's actually the only one left now that they unceremoniously killed off Echo last season. But it's good to see him again, along with Rex's, I don't know if I can say it's new-ish armor, because I know I read somewhere that he fused the parts of the Phase 2 armor with the Phase 1, because Rex thought that, or no, he didn't like the new armor because he thought that it was making the clones more expendable or something like that. I read that a while ago and I haven't read it since. But good to see Rex again. I mean, he's always nice. And of course, like the new clones. I mean, it's always nice seeing new clones and the varied armor designs. I've always loved the variation between them and, you know, how they have all that. And speaking of which, and his name, let alone his armor, is kind of odd, but Tuff's armor, and I guess they ran out of names that day, and they decided to name him after Tupperware. But I don't know if you guys noticed, but on his helmet, obviously, like on that same part of his face, there was what looked like, to me anyway, a teardrop kind of style tattoo. And that reminded me of Lil Wayne and, I don't know, whichever other rappers have that tattoo. And I think I heard somewhere that means something, but I have no idea what that is right now. So I thought that was kind of odd. I mean, from what I could tell, that was the only thing he had, and maybe he had something like on his shoulders, but the little teardrop thing was kind of odd. Let's see. Oh, and if you guys noticed, we get the return of Hardcase, Jesse, and Kix from way back in The Deserter. So it was really nice to see them. And let me go on record here as saying Hardcase was a beast in this episode. And he was amazing. I know I'll say it again as I get down this list of notes I have here. And if I take too long, feel free to edit some of the less important things out. But Hardcase was amazing. I loved him. He, from his armor design to the gun he had, he was great. Let's see. The Umbarans. It's the first time we're seeing them as a people. But, I like them. I mean, they're the planet Umbara reminded me a bit of Felucia, just like with the giant plants and everything. But I liked them. I mean, they had a good look style about them. I loved the look of their weapons. It looked, I don't know why I made this connection, but their weapons remind me of the, if you guys have seen the Light Strike commercials for like some new laser tag type toy. the Umbaran guns look like the Light Strike laser guns for some reason. Maybe that's just me. But, and their tanks, the Umbaran tanks, reminded me a lot of the Geonosian fighters and something else that escapes my mind right now. But, like, actually with the Geonosians, you just have to, like, put two of them side by side. But actually, I like the design of the tanks, and I don't know, not so much, I guess, about what they were firing. Looked a little too weird. But anyway, the Umbarans looked good. And something that I noticed in the, like, when the clones, or when the Republic first gets on the ground on Umbara, and they're making their charge against the first group of Umbarans that are there, the clones are always talking. I mean, in that one scene where, I don't know, like 10, 15, or 20 clones are on those little personal walkers. I have no idea what the name is. But, like, the one says, hey, let's go get him. And you hear, like, yo, yeah, that's right, let's go get him. And, like, the same thing repeated a dozen times over just between them. And then it shows all of them, like, saying the exact same thing. I mean, you'd think that they'd be able to vary it up just a little bit more than that. But that doesn't take away from the love that the clones have for me, anyway. Let's see, and that vine, that creature that Hardcase stumbled over, that, I don't know, the other clone said was just a vine, that reminded me a lot of the Watcher in the Water, I'm pretty sure it was called, from Lord of the Rings. I think back in the first movie when the Fellowship was trying to get into Moria, and Gandalf was banging his head against the stone gate or whatever, trying to figure out how to get in. That's what that was from. I love the close quarters combat that the clones got. We've seen them handle themselves with the blasters like a dozen times over. We haven't ever seen them fight hand to hand, I think, except for Commander Gree back in Prisoner, I think. Oh, that one where they catch a new gunray and the one Senegar turns traitor. But, let's see. Hardcase, get back to my favorite clone, or I guess one of my favorite clones. He reminds me, I know I'm saying reminds a lot, but Hardcase reminds me a lot of Heavy. I mean, especially with the type of gun and, like, his attitude at certain points. Only Hardcase is more energized. He's a lot more energized, more ramped up. It makes me think that if Heavy hadn't sacrificed himself, and I'm not sure how that would work, but if Heavy was still, you know, alive, he'd probably be an arc by now alongside Fives. But imagine Heavy and Hardcase, like, side by side or back to back with both of them with those big rotary guns. Now that would be something to see. I'd like that. I would love that a lot. And something I noticed with the Umbarans, very quickly, they are really big on ambushes. I think about 95% of the time we see them, they're weaseling their way behind the Republic to catch them in the butt. And you'd think, especially with them, like, first getting on and bar, you'd think they'd have more of a guard for that sort of thing, more of a, like, a patrol. But, I mean, I could understand with it being, like, a planet of darkness and all that mist and everything, how that'd be difficult. But, I mean, you'd think that they have some semblance of a guard for that kind of thing. But I did like the ambushing from the Umbarans. I mean, we haven't seen that too often, and maybe we have. I'm just overlooking them, but, I like that. Pong, Jedi General Pong Krell. Oh, man, where to start with that one? If they had had him from the start of the episode with, like, I mean, if they had explained, like, Anakin gets called away in, like, that opening speech or whatever from the narrator, and they had Krell for the whole episode, you know that if Rex had, you know, if they called in the bombing run and Rex had proposed they move from that site, like, if just in case the airstrike overshoots, Krell, there was no way Krell would have listened to him, and, like, at that point, he would have made him stay there, and, well, we all know how that would have ended. That would have been a really short show. The clones are, like, I noticed the clones' initial reaction to Krell's arrival suggests that we should have heard or known more about him than we are. Because, I mean, I think it was Fodz that said, Krell's here. We're like, that must mean something's really bad or something like that. I mean, suggesting that he's been in a lot of battles and, you know, we haven't ever heard anything about him. And understanding that, because, you know, they wouldn't have had, I mean, they probably wouldn't have had an idea for Krell way back when. But, I mean, I don't know, that just kind of left me up in the air for a minute. Oh, and I'm curious as to why the Chancellor called Anakin back. I mean, maybe he's, maybe the Chancellor is feeling lonely and he needs Anakin to come and tuck him in at night. I don't know. My initial impression of Krell, he was a dick. Like, completely. Like, right after Anakin leaves, you can see the expression on his face changes. He does not care about the clones. I mean, he does not value them at all, at least in the beginning of the episode. Maybe that changed by the end. But, I mean, referring to Rex by his number, CT-7567, that is something we haven't ever seen before. So he, Krell, does not care about the clones at all. I mean, he thinks in, what would be the term? I know it's not really speciesist, but, you know, like what I'm getting at. Because I think he says after Rex, says your reputation precedes you, like I'm honored to serve with you. He's like, I'm surprised you can understand honor being a clone or, you know, like something like that. I was just, wow. Like, I mean, I like that we see something different, we get a new Jedi and we get, you know, all that brings. But I do not like Krell. He is a guy. And my apologies if that language is inappropriate, but he is. I'm sorry. And if you guys notice, his lightsabers, those are like those are foldable double-bladed lightsabers. And I mean, I love the brief little display we get when those two Umbaran flying things come and attack. So that was that was nice. Can't wait to see more of the double blades in action in the later episodes. Now, around the 18-minute mark, or I guess the second commercial, I really, really got the Empire-esque or the Stormtrooper feel, like how the clones looked after they got berated by Krell. And I think the music mashed up a little bit, but you know he turns around and you see him like just walk on. They don't say anything. I so got like they were pushing for, pushing for the more serious aspect. You know, they're starting to pushing for more like the Empire, all that. And, Krell's strategy, quote-unquote, attacking the main road, which is most likely the best defended route, you know, out of all of them, that was just so stupid. Oh, man, call himself a general, that's just stupid. I mean, and with the numbers that he had, maybe he had more clones, but it looked like to me he didn't have all that clones. He could just be throwing them at the Umbar and say, hey, go distract them. Or, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. But, overall, this episode had a darker tone, like more serious than any previous battle episode. Definitely more so than, the opening Mon Calamari arc. Way more serious. Love the interplay on the main road between Rex and Fives, and it makes it a whole lot easier to see from back in the preview how, if you guys remember saying, or Fives saying someday this war is going to end, you know, with the clones all around. That makes a lot more sense now, especially with their treatment by Krell. I mean, I'm looking forward to see that. I'm looking forward to see the rest of this arc, really, because, I mean, I love this episode. as soon as I can, I will definitely try to buy this episode off of iTunes if I ever get another iTunes card. But I loved Pup's Umbaran takedown. I mean, he tries to grab him from behind. He flings him over and like, point blank blasts the Umbaran right in the face. And like I said, I knew I was going to get back to Hard Case. I loved his blast by blast commentary of like make him eat heat as he's holding down the trigger on the rotary. And at the end, when they're all retreating, he's like, where are you going? Get back here. And he's still shooting at them. I love Hard Case in this. And Fives, I mean, if there's ever a clone to take the cake with that, it was Fives, because the one Umbaran jumps down on him. Fives, you know, he wrestles him, gets him to the ground. He slams his elbow. he blows him right in the helmet, cracks the visor, and like lets out the gas or whatever, because it looked like Barbara was having difficulty breathing. And just the way Fives finished him off, so he like the way he held his gun, and the way he looked, he's just like complete badass. Just three shots, he's done. I loved that a lot. That was great. And before they give the retreat order, you could definitely feel the clones' desperation, because, I mean, they're getting picked off one by one, left and right, in the, you know, I mean, you can definitely feel that. And, of course, I hate Krell. I loved Five stepping up to him, and I could not believe, along with Five, and you can see that in his reaction, but I could not believe that Krell actually drew his lightsaber at him. I seriously thought for a split second, this is how Five is going to go. Krell's going to lose his temper, or something, and Five is going to get his head chopped off. I could not believe that. And, you know, I loved like three times over Rex getting in Krell's face and standing up for himself and the other clones. That was amazing. I loved that. It was about time. And, I'll try to keep this quick so I don't run out of time again. If things keep up like the way they have in this episode, if Anakin doesn't come back, as much as I hate to say it, I could see this arc end up being the death of, dare I say, Rex or Fives. I mean, as much as I hate it, I could see it happening. With Krell being the douche that he is, I could see it. Character upon Krell, obviously said this, I hate him. It was nice to see something different. I hate Krell. I almost wish he would take a stray blaster bolt when no one's looking. Or, hey, maybe have one of the clones do it. Overall, I loved this episode. I'm definitely gonna watch it again because I've got it DVR'd on my TV. I'm definitely gonna watch this again. I loved this episode. I cannot wait for next episode. I've tried not to watch too much. You know what's gonna be for next episode. Try to keep myself like in the dark and you know keep it myself surprised. But bring on next week. Bring on the next Clone Wars. Love the podcast. Thanks for all the work you guys do, and thank you.
Hi, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Robert Darth Ikari calling with my thoughts on Shadows of Umbara. Well, I'm sure that there's a big sigh of relief coming from most of the community at this point for actually having a Clone Wars episode in the Clone Wars. But again, it kind of sounds like a broken record to say just how darn beautiful this show looks, but really that was an impressive looking episode. I've only been able to watch it once, but I'm definitely going to try to check it out maybe tonight when I get home from work or whatever. But gorgeous, gorgeous graphics. I found it interesting to see the differences that they're starting to show with some of the characters here, mostly with the Master Krell. I mean, that was an interesting take on a Jedi to see one that was that easily, would so easily dismiss the humanity of the clones. You can kind of feel that if more of the Jedi Masters treat the clones the same way, you might be able to kind of understand the whole of Order 66 and how that was able to go through as quickly as it did. One question that I do have about this episode is why is it the Umbarans have to wear gas masks when they're on their own planet, yet the clones and Krell and Anakin and everybody seem to be able to walk around with their helmets off just fine? Seems kind of strange that people would live on a planet that they can't actually breathe their own atmosphere, but maybe there's an explanation out there which, you know, and out later. So, but also, clones were quite more ruthless this time around. I mean, they'd shoot a guy and knock him down, and then they'd just come in for a kill shot on him. You know, there were a couple of those shot-to-the-face pick images, which was pretty darn cool. So, we'll see what happens next week. And as always, enjoying your show, too. Talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Personally, I really like the kill shots, too. I noticed it as I was watching it, but I didn't think to note anything down before we recorded or anything. But the kill shot thing was pretty cool. And once again, to reference the forum post about the kiss that drove me mad, apparently, you can show that kind of stuff. Although in this case, no grisly shots from the ground where you see the person's head explode or anything. But you can't show Ventress kissing the cheek of a clone.
It wasn't only just that one shot. We saw, and these are humanoid people. Yeah, they got the helmets, but you can see their faces. we saw a shot in the opening assault where a guy gets blatantly his face stepped on by an AT-RT. I mean, that's going to leave a definite mark.
Yeah, doesn't the clones, they don't take prisoners, do they? You know, we've seen the Separatists take prisoners, but it doesn't seem like the clones take any prisoners at all, do they? They just seek out and destroy. Hence, more stormtrooperish behavior on the invasion.
Well, but usually they're battling droids. You don't take droids prisoners. I mean, I don't expect anybody's taken the coffee makers in Iraq prisoner.
Well, landing at Point Rain, they were against, you know, they weren't humanoid combatants, but they were living combatants. They weren't taking any prisoners there. You know, when they're fighting alien racers, they're not taking any prisoners. You know, there's no mercy that these clones have, you know, but they expect mercy themselves, which is, I find very interesting.
Hey guys, this is Will, otherwise known as Venator 1229 on the forums, calling about the most recent episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, Darkness of Umbara. And I'm speechless. Like, this might be the best Clone Wars I've seen thus far in the series. Like, it had everything. It had action, it had good storyline, and it had good dialogue. Like, there have been a handful of Clone Wars episodes that I've considered amazing, such as Rookies back in Season 1, just because of the dialogue and storyline. And then there have been quite a few episodes which I've considered good for action, like the Ryloth Trilogy and Geonosis, and etc. But this episode had absolutely everything. Like, already a minute in, I was already blown away by the dialogue and action. But there's just a few things I want to touch up on. Like, first, starting off with Fives. Like, Fives, I mean, we've seen him all throughout the series. And it's just awesome to see how much he's grown from being a little innocent clone trooper private to, like, a fully armed ARC trooper who's just out there beating down enemies, like, without mercy. Like, I forget where it was, but it's when they're being ambushed on the road and... He hit the Umbarian's helmet, and the Umbarian was crying for mercy, and no, he didn't let up. He just beat the crap out of him. I just love that. It's amazing. Let's see. This General Krill guy, like, well, first of all, when he whipped out his two dual lightsabers, I thought he could be considered like the Jedi Grievous, like, four lightsabers just out there doing stuff. It's just awesome. But I was never a big fan of, like, Clone Wars introducing new characters with the etc. of, like, the clones and stuff. Like, new Jedi, except for Ahsoka, I never really liked. But this Krill guy, I mean, like, his character, I really don't like him just because of how, like, snappy he is with the clones and just how he treats the clones, like, how they're said is supposed to be treated, like, as cannon fodder. But as, like, a character, I really like him just because he's interesting and he contributes a lot to the storyline and stuff. And I have a feeling in the future he'll get yelled at by, like, Kenobi and all of them for putting Rex and Fives and all the clones in such harm's way. And, I don't know, this new clone, I think his name was Hardcase or whatever, but the guy with the chain gun, like, I just loved his dialogue. Like, he contributed a lot to the episode, which is why I say this episode really nails it with dialogue, just because he's like, you want a piece of this? And he's like, where are you going? Ha, ha, ha. It's just great. Like, I just love that. I love seeing that with the clones. It just really gives them a lot of characters. One thing I really noticed was with Krill, when Fives was yelling at him, Krill whips out his lightsaber and he's like, back off, like, with body language. And I thought that was something Jedi weren't supposed to do, like, use fear as a weapon. It kind of seemed unorthodox, but I don't know. Like, Krill kind of seems unorthodox just because Jedi are peacekeepers, but this guy kind of seems like a military Jedi. Like, he knows what he's doing, kind of, but... If any Jedi shows like commandership or generalship, I think Krill is the one. I noticed a lot when the clones were talking, they'd say back in the day, and that's kind of cool because this is now like the time in the Clone Wars, like in the later parts where they can start saying that about like the first few months and stuff. Like, I think Rex said that and someone else, I can't remember who it was. But to close, I really liked how this episode ended. Like, this is how a Clone Wars should end. It should like have people like standing on their feet and like wanting the next Clone Wars episode to begin next week, just because they're like, oh well, back to the action, and then they're fighting, and then it just ends right there. It doesn't finish off the storyline like it usually does. It just ends, and it just shows the camera zooming away from them, and they're running off to the battlefield to keep fighting. And like, I honestly can say I'm really excited for the next episode. Like, this is the best episode I've ever seen. Like, this is what the Clone Wars cartoon series should be like. Like, this season has been saved by this episode. I just cannot express in words how great this episode was. But other than that, I really look forward to it, and I think that's about it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I totally agree with him. I feel like this is the kind of stuff we want to see in Clone Wars, which is actually kind of funny because I usually don't like the battle for battle's sake type episodes, but I felt like there was enough like character stuff going on in here that it was really intriguing and it was a lot of fun. And I'm so glad that they've moved away from the previous kind of episodes we've been seeing and gotten into some stuff where I feel like we're more invested because we care about these characters. We like these characters and there's a lot of action and we don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of these characters probably won't make it to the end of this arc. And it's a lot of fun and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm enjoying my cracker.
I have to agree. You know, when you sit back and you stand back, and when it's in the context of having this episode after what we've gotten, where not a lot of people were happy with the previous couple episodes, then we get this episode. I think this episode would have stand alone, even if we would have gotten some really great, you know, Senate spy episodes before this one. I think this episode would have stand alone for all the things that the caller said about how we had a lot of action, we had a lot of character development, a lot of intrigue, a lot of mystery. You know, I think this episode would have stand alone regardless of where it would have occurred in this season.
You know, one thing about this episode, and that caller brings it to mind, I think, you know, like the last two episodes about the droids, we walked away saying, well, we walked away saying a lot of things, but one of the things we walked away wondering was, why this, why now? With this episode, this is the perfect time for it. We are 3 1/4 seasons invested in these characters. To see Anakin called away mid-battle, and then this General Krell comes in and starts treating these troopers who we have seen grow and become who they are now. I mean, everybody, somewhere in the back of their mind was, oh no, you don't talk to Rex like that. What the crap? So I think this was really good timing on this episode, because while there wasn't a whole lot of character exposition and growth in this particular episode per se, we've had enough of it with these clones that we sided with them. We felt we wanted to stick up for them to this guy. This guy, we want to see him catch the stray blaster bolt next episode or two. But we really connected with the clones in this, and I think this was actually a really good placement.
So, wait, you guys weren't sitting there saying, I mean, instead of, you don't talk to Rex like that, you weren't sitting back like me and saying, man, these clones have gotten uppity, no?
No, I agree with Rockstar.
No, I'm kidding.
You know, that is a very good point, Rockstar. It's like, you hit it right there, because I was saying the same exact thing. Like, you don't know who Rex is. You know, you're treating him like they're fresh out of Kamino. You know, and I took it personally. I took it personally when he's talking to my Captain Rex like that, you know. But that is brilliant the way they did that, because they made him a character we love to hate. And there's nothing more that you can do for a character except, you know, be the hero or make you a character you love to hate. So we do want to see him. I do want to see him get a blaster bolt in the back on Felucia or somewhere like that, you know. Give me the scene of Order 66 where Krell takes it. Because, you know, just like you said, Rockstar, don't mess with my clones, man. These guys had my back.
I'm not sure I'm with you guys totally on the greatness of the episode. I think it definitely is like Baron's comment about the cracker. You know, you're getting your first little morsel after not really getting much out of the last few weeks. If this episode were a standalone episode, I would be here decrying its pacing. Because we wound up with, what, 5-10 minutes at the beginning where basically nothing happens. A lot's happening, but nothing happens. Because it's a bunch of clones we don't care about getting wiped out by enemies we don't care about, or wiping them out, as the case may be. And that whole first battle sequence, while awesome to look at, doesn't have enough of those little character references in it to make it feel like it's something that we should care about in a broader scheme of things. It's something that could have been handled in 2 minutes rather than almost 10 minutes. And then everything that's cool and character-driven about the episode happens in that last 10 minutes or so. From a pacing standpoint, it was awful. Unless you think of this as one part out of four, in which case this is just a quick little introductory bit, and in that case, the pacing works fine. I have to wonder if we're going to look back at these four episodes and do the reverse of what we said about last episode. Last episode, it was, boy, this felt rushed. Maybe it should have been 2 episodes. I'm wondering if this time we'll look back at it and say, wow, so little happened in that first half of Darkness on Umbara. I wonder if maybe this should have been a 3-episode arc, and maybe they crushed some of the dead space down a little bit so we didn't see nearly as much generic battle and more character-focused battle in the long run. I think the jury's going to be out on how well this episode stands on its own until we've seen the next 3.
I knew our dynamic would reach its ugly head somewhere, Nathan, because I could not disagree with you more. I think that a lot of stuff happened, a lot of character development happened that we have been clamoring for. I mean, there is no character development in the last couple episodes. I mean, we know C-3PO is going to be funny. We know R2-D2 is going to be, the boss and stuff like that. Here, we saw a lot of character development, and we got new characters that we hate. We got old characters that we love, new characters that we hate. I think a whole lot happened in this episode besides the battles, we saw the bombing of the ridge, and all that stuff like that. I think that when you look back, I think you'll be a little bit more kind to what we saw. And I think it will stand alone.
Well, there's great character development. Don't get me wrong. I love the character development in the second half. The first half just felt very generic to me in most respects, just because it was less focused on character development for those characters that we care about already. It was more, here's a clone killing a bad guy. Here's another clone killing a bad guy. Here's an AT-RT killing a bad guy. Here's a bad guy killing a clone. Okay, now let's move to the character portion of the show.
I guess for me, it's just that the clones that we do care about, when I see a clone that hasn't had a name yet, hasn't gotten a name, hasn't gotten like a cool, certain thing on their armor, that identifies them, that the way I feel for Rex and the way I feel for Jesse and the way I feel for Fives kind of spills over to those other clones, because they have the potential to be someone that I can care about. So I guess that's kind of how we're seeing a little bit different, because when it's just, if they're not faceless clones to me anymore, they may not somebody I don't know about yet, but it's still someone who has the potential to be Rex or the potential to be Fives, because Fives did start out as just a regular clone and earned his ART trooper armor.
Which gives us a bigger parallel. Until we get to know a clone character, we are all General Krell looking at the clones. Once we get to know them, we're more of an Anakin perspective. See? There's your deepness for the episode.
Hi, guys. This is Joe, Bane of the Sith, on the forums. And real quick call this week. Just wanted to let you know that if how Jedi Master Pong Krell is indicative in any way of how the Jedi Masters and Generals treat clones that aren't the Jedi that we see on a weekly basis, if that disregard is what is shown for their lives and their individualism and treating them like anything other than fleshy droids, then I'm totally seeing now why Order 66 was no problem. Because this guy has got to go. And I know he's going to end up being some type of super bad guy or something, but he's got to go. So, can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it later.
A question that pops to mind. Do you think that maybe there's a chance we're going to wind up finding that Krell has spent a lot of time on Kamino? Because, we have those bounty hunter characters that we saw, I guess Brick being one of them, who really had a very high level of disregard for the clones as individuals because they spent time on Kamino with them when they're all, very new. They don't have a lot of individualized personality yet. And, of course, they're around the Kaminoans who look at them as products. I would not be surprised to find that Krell has some link back to Kamino that could help explain his callous disregard of these lives.
There's definitely something in Krell's background that we're going to find out. why he's the way he is, because just like the caller said, he's this. I don't believe that this is indicative of how the other Jedi generals treat their clones. I mean, they may have some sort of indifference, as in they're soldiers, so I don't want to kind of get close to them because, you know, if I get close to too many of them and I see too many of them die, then that could affect me. But to treat them, to pull a lightsaber on a troop that are basically a bunch of your bodyguards, you know, they're going to supposed to protect you with their lives, you know, to go ahead and do that, that is turning the corner that I don't think that a lot of the Jedi who aren't close to the dark side, you know, like a previous caller said, using fear, you know, as a weapon, you know, that's like rule number one is not to do that. You know, that will lead you down the dark path. And I just think that, you know, Yoda's going to come out of the mist and whoop this boy. You know what I'm saying? Something's going to happen with Krell. And we're going to find out that he's either playing both sides of the coin or that he's going to go dark. You know, something's going to happen.
I do think we're going to get some answers. I hope that they haven't been notoriously forthcoming. We don't even get a webcomic to explain this guy this time. So I'd like to think that this is going to get resolved, because I know there's no way we're the only ones scratching our head as to how is this guy possibly like this when this is so totally un-Jedi. This is so totally not like anything that we've seen from any other general or anyone else. So there has to be a reason, a deep-seated reason for this. Hopefully we'll get to see that before this guy catches that stray blaster bolt.
I would toss in there, though, as far as the standpoint of seeing this character go dark, I would love to see him pull a lightsaber on somebody else, only for them finally to reach the point where maybe Rex, or maybe even Fives, pulls a blaster on him. Like, put it away, General. That sort of thing. Because you see that type of thing pop up from time to time in military movies, and you've got your connections to other films that they loved to do in the Clone Wars. I mean, heck, Krell, that's a name from The Hidden Planet, if I remember right. So they're connecting these to other films, other genres. Why not see a scene like that? I would love to see how he handles that, because how he handles that would be indicative of his personality on a deeper level, just like pulling it out in the first place, as opposed to him just mouthing off all the time.
It may not be, though. I'm not sure if I want to think that they're going to give us a lot of information as to why he's being this way, but I'm not entirely certain they will, because this isn't really unprecedented. I actually just remembered this. In the Republic Commando books, they drop comments about how a lot of the Jedi actually don't treat them like humans, and they actually mention Quinlan Voss specifically as one of the worst generals to work under, because he sees them just as units. And I'm wondering if maybe that's what they're drawing on instead. And if that's the case, I feel like that's too bad, because it would be kind of a waste of an opportunity to use this character for some interesting character growth moments. But that's kind of playing in my mind now, that they may not do anything more interesting with him. I kind of hope he's working for the Separatists, because I think that would be really interesting, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Great point, Jen. And Quinlan Voss, and like you said, great point, Nathan, that he was on the dark side for a little bit. So that could be an indication of that Krell is flirting with disaster.
When a guy with four arms flirts with you, you got to watch all those hands.
Oh, really?
Hey, at least I didn't make the comment about how I'd love to see him fight with two arms and flip the bird with the other two. Come on.
With his nunchuck double-bladed lightsabers.
There you go.
That is true. They do kind of look like nunchucks when someone's just holding the nunchucks as opposed to actually using them, where you got the two cylinders side by side.
Yeah, they have very thick hilt.
Well, you know, speaking of those lightsabers, did you notice in one of the shots he's got one ignited, I believe, and the other one on the other side is facing the same direction. Like, the emitter seems like it's facing the same direction. So it doesn't even seem like it's necessarily that one blade comes out one facing one way and one comes out the other facing the other way. It almost looks like he's got like either four of them or two double bladeds attached together. It looks really weird, unless that was just an error in the particular shot and the design of the way he's holding them.
Hello, my name is Burton. I'm a first-time caller, but I've listened for the past two seasons now. First off, I have to say I absolutely loved this episode. It's been a lackluster season so far, to say the least. Even the first couple episodes with the water battle scenes weren't my favorite, and then the past couple droid episodes were rough to put it nicely. But this episode was awesome. It's probably top tier of my favorite episodes thus far. And my first impression I got after watching it was Republic Commandos. I know it doesn't deal with them at all, but just the feel of, I'm talking about the books, not the video game. It had the feel of the books, the way the Jedi treated the clones. It was a great episode. Sound design was awesome towards the beginning. Just the sound of the, I guess, the shadow people. I didn't catch the name of their species. Their weapons, their vehicles was really cool. One thing I didn't understand was if they lived on that home world, how could they not breathe their own atmosphere, yet Rex had no trouble breathing it? Thought that was a little weird. I think you'd evolve to be able to breathe in your own atmosphere, but, you know, maybe they came later. I don't know. Other than that, great overall episode. I don't get why General Krell wasn't helping to fight at the end of the battle. Maybe he thought he was too good to be in the first platoon that went in, or maybe that was just a small part of the army. But that was a little strange. Other than that, a really good episode, and I'm eager to see how the rest of the storyline plays out. It's good to see Fives again. Glad he didn't die a pointless death like last season, but hopefully they keep him around for a little longer. And, you know, I'm curious to see what Anakin had to be rushed back to the Chancellor for. So I don't know if we'll find that out, but that'll be interesting. And I think they just want to make case for why it was so easy for the clones to kill the Jedi in Return of the Sith. So, Revenge of the Sith, sorry. The coolest part of the episode was when Fives speaks out against General Krell and he pulls his lightsaber out on him, I actually yelled as I was watching it. That was so intense. I legitimately thought he was going to kill him then and there. That would have been an interesting death. But, wow, that was a very powerful scene. So it'd be cool if there's some fan fiction where Fives get to kill Krell after Order 66. That'd be pretty funny. But just a very, very powerful scene. So I'm very eager to see how the rest of this plays out and if there's any more interaction between Fives and the general. Good episode overall, and I'll be eager to see what you guys think about it. All right, thanks so much. Bye.
I must say, he brings up a good point mentioning that they are called the Shadow People as one of the ways of referring to these people. Because, you know, when I think Shadow People, I, of course, immediately think of someone who is stark white.
I thought it was actually really perfect that they're pale. Because I know in, like, natural environments, when you have, like, cave creatures and stuff, they're usually white. And then they're usually blind because they have no need. There's no sunlight to force them to create pigment in their skin to as a defense against it. So I think it made sense that they're pale. And as far as the helmets with the air, with the gas in it, we're all assuming that it's that there is necessary for them to breathe. I was kind of thinking, playing in my head, what if it's some sort of like stimulant that they're inhaling, or some sort of weapon on their own makes them like stronger or faster, or enables them to, you know, go without food or rest for a long period of time, some sort of like, you know, super serum, kind of like Captain America-esque type thing.
Wow. Wow, that's great. You know, now that I think about it, you know, that's a great point, because the clones were mentioned more than once in this episode how they were tired, quote unquote, and it didn't seem like the Umbarans got tired at all. They were ambushing them. They would retreat and then reattack. So you may be onto something there.
All right, we want to thank everybody who called in and left us voicemail. Remember, you can do so as well, and your voicemails could make it into our next episode. Now, we are going to be back next week to talk about the General, and we will see where this dynamic between General Krell and these troopers continues. We got a little bit of a preview, but it was more of just a clip. Didn't really tell us very much, except for apparently they need to go attack the airfield. So I guess we'll see where that goes. And I want to thank Jen, Nathan, and Barrett for joining me at the beginning of this arc, and we'll see just where this leads us, and we'll see everybody back here next week. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie. Always a pleasure to do a podcast with a rock star and a biologist and an educator.
Good night, folks. But Dan, is it a story arc or is it a story CT27?
Thanks, Dan. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
But, oh, I lost my train of thought, Rockstar.
Well, you're fired.
Oh, let me see. I was going, I'll try to remember it.
I actually think that, if I'm not mistaken, there's a couple of different subspecies of Besalisks. And this guy, Krell, is part of the subspecies known as the Douchebaggians.
I knew that was going to get worked in somewhere.
Crap! I was hoping to get you again, but that's okay. I'll keep trying each episode.
That's Nathan's favorite word.
Douchebaggians, yes.
Dear Lord, Nathan, did you really just say you weren't even born yet in 1979?
I was born October 17, 1979. I'm a teacher, and I was born the day the United States Department of Education was founded, which is okay. By itself. But yeah, this came out 6 months before I was born. In fact, actually,
was that supposed to be the spooky sound?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the spooky sound. That's the
was that ABC?
But no, not only is that 6 months before I was born, but the sequel to it, Han Solo's Revenge, came out exactly 1 week before I was born. So there were 3 Expanded Universe novels out there before I was even born. Splinter of the Mind's Eye and the first 2 Han Solo books. I'm a youngin' compared to some of y'all.
Some?
Yeah. No,
let's see. You were born in 79. Jen was born in 82. Right, Jen?
Yeah.
Barrett?
Thanks for outing her. I was born in 76.
God in heaven, you freaking puppies.
Nice. Well, Jen's my sister's age then. That's nice. You know, see, there's a camaraderie thing here. It's a generational thing. That's why usually I don't agree with Barrett, because he's an old fogey. It has nothing to do with anything else.
What's that make me? I don't even want to talk to you people anymore.
Yeah, where were you born?
74.
Oh, come on. That's only a couple years. That's
only a couple years.
Okay. You'll wind up not getting Social Security 5 years before I won't get Social Security.
So let me do the math. So Jen, you're 27?
I'm 29. 30 is coming up in April. It scares the crap out of me.
Wow. So, okay.
It's not that bad, Jen. You just can't do the equal amount of shots as to your birthday anymore, because you would die.
Carmella's only 27. So I guess she was born in 80, I guess, right?
Man, cradle robber.
Hey, you want it worse. Jody, she is 22.
Oh my!
Wow!
Whoa.
So when we're here watching this, I recognize the fact that she was born 6 years after Return of the Jedi was already out. She's closer to the launch of Heir to the Empire than she was to Jedi.
So was she in the first class you taught her?
I was gonna say, so you handed her diploma and then you asked her on a date. Is that how it worked?
But interestingly enough, she is actually slightly younger than the first group of students that I ever taught, because I've been teaching for 10 years.
Wow, I thought I was bad with Nathan. All you had to do was buy her some candy. Be like, here, you want some candy? Come on. Come out with me. I'm just kidding.
Tootsie Roll Drops, baby. See, now I'm dating myself, because those don't even exist anymore, do they?
Oh, my God.
I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you, Nathan, that Jen is on the call.
Bear in mind my icon, Dan.
He likes bouncing tits. She loves him even.
I have another one that has boobies on it, too.
There you go. See?
If you want us to adhere to these rules, you put it in an email, Okay, that was
exactly.
Not
and I might read it. I might not. Okay.
We want to thank everybody who called. Let me try to get without Nathan halfway through it.
I got a question.
Oh, God.
Was it me? Well, you see, they all had a bad experience at a Sinead O'Connor concert one time, so they're not calling. They're not, you know, pulling any punches here.
Jeez, they're all really big fans of the Pope.
Nothing compares to Krell. Damn you, Susan Powder! Wasn't that her name? The motivational speaker, the bald lady? Was that Susan Powder?
Oh my goodness. How can you know her and you were born after me? She hasn't been on television in years before I got married. Wow.
Mind like a steel trap. It's just a little bit rusted open.
I think that man enjoyed his cracker.
Oh, wow.
And so does your girlfriend, Nathan.
Nice. Very nice.
All right. Jen, why don't you take first response on this one? Yeah, that's right.
I don't have much. Like, you guys really aren't, like, railroading me over. Like, I just don't talk a lot. It's okay.
Listen. You didn't get the email from Arnie, okay? Or from Rockstar about that, so.
Yes, she did.
Everybody you're going.
Even though it didn't necessarily apply all the time to Jen, she still got it.
All right.
It's like we're pushing her on the.
You guys gotta pressure me?
Yeah, we're pushing her on the you're gonna ride this ride. First, backwards, in the dark.
All right. I thought it was pretty good. I thought I liked it. I don't like being put on the spot.
Nathan, are you freaking eating?
Yes, he was.
I was during that
something.
One. I was trying very hard to keep it shoved into the side of my mouth because I didn't realize I was going to have to disagree with Barrett so quickly. At a Starburst, crammed into my cheek.
We waited to the end of the episode, but whatever you was eating sounded very delicious because you were.
I didn't know if you could tell it, and I know I had to keep stopping because I had to not choke. And that was a "Do you guys think?" So it's nice to see that nobody cares.
I'm sorry, I was eating something.
All right, hang on, just can you guys hear me? I just got a warning pop up on the computer here.
We can hear you.
Can hear you fine.
And it looks like the recording is still okay. I mean, it still says it's going. It popped up a "cannot access your sound card." I was like, "What?" But I think it was something else crashing. Let me just close that. Okay, sorry.
Quit watching your porn sites while we're doing this.
Ha ha ha.
So technically, he could actually ignite both lightsabers facing one way, so he could have kind of like a pitchfork weapon. Instead of a double-bladed weapon. Is that what you're saying?
I guess. Be like a light fork.
Like a chopsticks, like two chopsticks on both sides kind of thing.
And since you say chopsticks, I picture the clones dancing on a big keyboard. I'm not too young to have seen Big.
Went to public high school, man. There's not anything you could say that I haven't heard. Wave.
So after they fight the clones, they'll go break Batman's back. About half the audience went, "Cool!" And everybody else was like, "What in the hell is he talking about?"
Yeah, that was Dan.
Let's make a Star Trek joke, too, while we're at it.
Quick, somebody say how this is like that episode of Different Strokes with the bike shop. You don't have to suck up. I don't have the power to fire you. It's all right.
I suck.
Jen always takes the nice way out.
Yes, he's very always.
No, it's that the first thing pops in my head is incredibly inappropriate, so it doesn't work.
And you know if you say it, too, he's going to use it.
Totally think that she's going to with that.
She learned her lesson from that one time, Dan, where you just, slowed down her speech and used every single syllable, you know. She's a very smart woman. Me? Not so smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, because Thanksgiving is the busy time for the podcast because we do the Black Friday thing.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So I would be able to be on.
Why it got to be Black Friday?
Because that's when you get all the best deals, man. If it was White Friday, you'd be getting robbed by the man.
All right. You win.
They'd be taking money out of your pocket.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and bow out too. And Dan, I'll get that file processed and uploaded and I'll email you before I shut everything down tonight to let you know the link.
Thank you, sir, because mine crapped out halfway through. So.
Cool. Well, mine might have too, but I've got the backup going because of Clone Me over there. So.
Oh.
But I don't treat that. I don't treat that Clone Me like it's a person, man. It's just there to record. It's just a number.
That's right.
Or a Skype ID, as a case may be.